Hello and welcome to Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 21st of January 2008, brought to you by azonano.com. My name is Stuart Cameron. In this edition of Azo Nano News, as well as bringing you the latest news from the international nanotechnology industry, we'll hear about diagnostic cameras that you can swallow, how carbon nanotubes are being used in electronic devices, how green nanotech investments are making good financial returns for investors, and how scientists have recently created the darkest material ever using carbon nanotubes. In this week's interview, Azo Nano's Cameron Chai speaks with Professor Graham Hodge, Dr. Diana Bowman, and Dr. Corinne Ludlow, authors of a newly released book about regulation and policy development surrounding the burgeoning nanotechnology industry. These stories and more in this edition of Azo Nano News. What if swallowing a pill with a camera could detect the earliest signs of cancer? Such a device could find warning signs of esophageal cancer, the fastest growing cancer in the United States. A fundamentally new design has created a smaller endoscope that is more comfortable for the patient and cheaper to use than current technology. In the past 30 years, diagnosis of esophageal cancer has more than tripled. The esophagus is the section of digestive tract that moves food from the throat down to the stomach. The scanning endoscope developed by the researchers is fundamentally different to current technology. It consists of just a single optical fibre for illumination and six fibres for collecting light, all encased in a pill. Once swallowed, an electric current flowing through the endoscope causes the fibre to bounce back and forth so that its lone electronic eye sees the whole scene, one pixel at a time. At the same time, the fibre spins and its tip projects red, green and blue laser light. The image processing then combines all this information to create a two-dimensional color picture. Quantum dots, tiny, intense, tunable sources of colorful light, are illuminating new opportunities in biomedical research, cryptography, and other fields. But these semiconductor nanocrystals also have a secret problem, a kind of nervous tick. They mysteriously tend to blink on and off like Christmas tree lights, which can reduce their usefulness. Scientists at JILA have found one possible way to solve the blinking problem and have induced quantum dots to emit photons, the smallest particles of light, faster and more consistently. The advance could make quantum dots more sensitive as fluorescent tags in biomedical tests and single-molecule studies, and steadier sources of single photons for unbreakable quantum encryption. By bathing the dots in a watery solution of an antioxidant chemical used as a food additive, the research team increased photon emission rates 4- to 5-fold, a shocking result because the rate at which light radiates is generally considered an immutable property of the dot. The chemical added at JILA apparently attaches to these imperfections, blocking the electron from being trapped and therefore preventing the dot from blinking off. Carbon nanotubes are attractive candidates for use as the active elements in the next generation of electronic devices. However, it's proven incredibly difficult to align nanotubes with device architectures. Most of the approaches for lining up carbon nanotubes reported until now are only applicable to discrete devices and are not readily scalable to the levels required for the mass production of nanotube-based chips. Now, this seemingly intractable problem has been overcome by a collaborative team of researchers from Seoul National University in South Korea. Researchers have developed a technique for aligning nanotubes over large areas based on the flow of a nanotube-containing solution through nanochannels. This technique is especially attractive because of its simplicity. No external stimuli, such as the application of an electric field or syringe pumping, are required to align the nanotubes. Saving the planet is a hot topic, especially when the planet is warming and oil is percolating around $100 a barrel. And that means greener nanotechnology applications such as ultracapacitors, lithium titanate batteries, dendrimers, single-walled carbon nanotubes and buckyballs are gaining more attention. Such enabling technologies include the lithium-ion batteries produced by Altair Nano for use in electric vehicles, the eco-friendly industrial materials provided by BASF, and the biofuels and healthcare products developed by Bayer. Investment in these and other companies led to an overall portfolio return in 2007 of 21%, far outpacing the 3.68% brought in by the S&P 500. Researchers at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute and Rice University have created the darkest material ever made by man. The material, a thin coating comprised of low-density arrays of loosely vertically aligned carbon nanotubes, absorbs more than 99.9% of light and one day could be used to boost the effectiveness and efficiency of solar energy conversion, infrared sensors and other devices. The researchers who developed the material have applied for a Guinness World Record for their efforts. The total reflectance of conventional black paint, for example, is between 5 and 10%. The darkest man-made material, prior to the discovery, boasted a total reflectance of 0.16% to 0.18%. The research team created a coating of low-density, vertically aligned carbon nanotube arrays that are engineered to have an extremely low index of refraction and the appropriate surface randomness, further reducing its reflectivity. The end result was a material with a total reflective index of 0.045%, more than three times darker than the previous record, which used a film deposition of nickel phosphorus alloy. Using nanotechnology, scientists from UCLA and Northwestern University have developed a localized and controlled drug delivery method that is invisible to the immune system. A discovery that could provide newer and more effective treatments for cancer and other diseases. The study provides an example of the enormous potential and clinical significance that nanomaterials may represent in such fields as oncology, endocrinology, and cardiology. The researchers used nanoscale polymer films, about 4 nanometers per layer, to build a sort of matrix or platform to hold and slowly release an anti-inflammatory drug. The films are orders of magnitude thinner than conventional drug delivery coatings. Using this system, drugs could be released slowly and under control for weeks or longer. A drug that is given orally or through the bloodstream travels throughout the system and dissipates from the body much more quickly. Using a more localized and controlled approach could limit side effects, particularly from chemotherapy drugs. Nowhere in nature is there so much beautiful colour as on the wings of butterflies. Scientists, however, are still baffled about exactly how these colours are created. Marco Giraldo has been examining the structure of the surface of the wings of the cabbage white and other butterflies. What they do know is that the colours are created in two different ways, via pigments and via nanostructures on the scales, which ensure that light is distributed in ways that are sometimes spectacular. Although the spatial structure of a scale depends on the type of butterfly, there are a number of general characteristics. A scale consists of two layers, linked by pillars. The undersurface is virtually smooth and without structure, but the upper surface is formed by a large number of elongated parallel ridges, about 1 to 2 micrometers from each other. The colour is determined by the dispersal of light by the scale structures and by the absorption of light by any pigments present. In this week's AzoNano interview, Cameron Chai talks with Professor Graham Hodge, Dr. Diana Bowman and Dr. Corinne Ladlow, authors of a newly released book about regulation and policy development surrounding the burgeoning nanotechnology industry.
This is Cameron Chai from AzoNano.com, and I've got with me today Professor Graham Hodge, who's the Director of the Monash Centre for Regulatory Studies at the Faculty of Law at Monash University, and his colleagues Dr. Corinne Ludlow, who's a Senior Lecturer, and Dr. Diana Bowman, who's a Postdoctoral Research Fellow also at Monash University. They are the editors of a new book that's recently come out called New Global Frontiers in Regulation, The Age of Nanotechnology. How are you all doing today?
Very good, thank you.
Very well, Cameron.
Good, thank you.
Good to hear. So tell me, this is the first book on regulation and policy relating to nanotechnology in the world, I believe.
Well, let's be clear. There's been lots of
things written about nanotechnology policy and lots of things written, I guess, in the academic journals about regulatory matters, biotechnology, and as well as sort of nanotechnology. But this is the first book that's been simply focused on issues of the potential to regulate nanotechnology.
So that's presumably why you wrote the book?
Well, we just thought that it was a frontier of knowledge, that it was about time we had a serious look at this challenge that we're facing. I guess we all accept that we're at the cusp of this new nano age, but we see, I guess, some sort of community concerns. We see concerns being voiced by the Royal Society in the UK. We see lots of advances and hear that there are 500 nano products already available, but we hadn't seen any kind of serious attempt at trying to get together a whole range of views on options open to nanotechnology regulation. Seeing that frontier existed, we thought that was a good thing for our regulatory studies centre to be involved in.
Okay, so given that there are these nanoproducts available and things like that, and nanotechnology has already been infiltrating the marketplace, did you feel that the book was possibly a little premature or maybe even late, I guess, given that these products are available, and also given the fact that there's no real clear-cut definition as to what nanotechnology is?
Whether it's too late is something you could argue about forever, but someone has to take a stand sometime, so we've done it now. But too premature, no. You're not going to get a clear definition if people don't start working on it, so the sooner the better. Too premature, in order to influence policy, people need to start thinking about things clearly before that policy is formed. So we thought it was a good idea to kick-start it with all these different views, put it all together, and help in the development of future policy making and decision making. And so I don't think it's too premature.
I might just add something to that, Kevin. I think the first step in any research exercise is to sit down and have a shot at documenting what we know. And one of the interesting things about this book is what we know about nanotechnology in regulatory terms is in many ways quite small, right? The simple question of defining nanotechnology. We put down a dozen and a half different definitions that we discovered around the world, and very difficult to regulate something if you can't define it. So documenting what we currently know and focusing on where that takes you, I think, is a positive research step. The other thing to add to Corinne's comment is that this book that we've got is really just the start of an ongoing conversation and an ongoing developmental exercise, and it doesn't purport to be, you know, the international answer as to how the whole range of nanotechnologies ought to be regulated. It really is the start of a major developmental exercise that we're going to have to embark on in the next decade or so.
We also saw through our earlier research that countries all around the world were grappling with basically the same sets of questions and that not necessarily coordinating their research efforts. So we thought that this book provided an opportunity to bring authors from all around the world and different backgrounds together in one volume, so as to show that these questions are not necessarily unique to Australia or the US or to Europe, and that in actually trying to confront some of the challenges, that we need to really work together to solve a lot of the issues.
So in putting together the first book on nanotechnology regulation, that's how you sought to choose your fellow authors for the book? By choosing people from a global perspective with a vast range of perspectives?
Oh, very much so, Cameron. If you look at some of the key authors, we won't go through them all, but characters such as Rob Visser from the OECD or Quazim Chowdhury from the UK or Gary Marchant from the US, all those people bring together very internationally aware views. They also bring together views from different disciplines, all of which are important in addressing these regulatory questions. Interestingly, the three sort of co-editors of this book come from different disciplinary backgrounds, and that's been a very positive force on the sorts of people we've chosen. We haven't simply gone down perhaps the law faculties or down the faculties of physics or chemistry or engineering, material science and so on. We've seen regulatory answers or regulatory questions as being best solved across multiple disciplines.
Well, that sounds particularly relevant, seeing as this is nanotechnology does seem to broach the barriers between all sorts of different fields of science and for that matter, law and things like that, as opposed to a lot of other technologies that more or less sit within a particular field of science.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's quite a fascinating area as well, because it not only links many disciplines, it also links the kind of major sectors that policy characters talk about. We traditionally think about governments regulating, but the fact is there's a very strong chance that the regulation of nanotechnologies in future will be by both government and business, and as well will have a very strong involvement with civil society organisations. So those three sectors, government, business and civil society, will be intimately involved in sort of the regulatory future for nanotechnology, not just government alone.
Okay then, well, for anybody that's interested in the book, it's called The New Global Frontiers in Regulation, The Age of Nanotechnology, edited by Graham Hodge, Diana Bowman and Corinne Ludlow. It's published by Edward Elgar Publishing. It's currently available around the world, everywhere except for the US. And for anybody that's interested in buying it, you can find details on how to buy it from our website, azonano.com, if you go through to the books link. And I'd like to thank Graham, Diana and Corinne for their time and wish them all the best of luck with the sale of their book.
Thanks, Cameron.
Thank you, Cameron.
AzoNano Business News. M-Phase Always Ready Incorporated, a micro and nanotechnology development company focused on advanced power and sensing solutions, today announced the completion of its 2008 strategic planning process, resulting in several new corporate developments that will accelerate the commercialization path of its revolutionary nanotechnology-based battery. Lord Sainsbury of Turville, former Parliamentary Under-Secretary of State for Science and Innovation, today dedicated the new £1.3 million clean room at Amatec Taylor Hobson's Leicester, England headquarters. The new clean room, which consists of Class 7 and Class 4 areas, is equipped with the latest metrology instrumentation for micro and nanotechnologies. The facility is an expansion of Taylor Hobson's Centre of Excellence Laboratory at Leicester, which provides measurement support, training and advice to UK manufacturing and research companies in the field of MNT through the Centre of Excellence in Metrology for Micro and Nanotechnologies Partnership. Zecotech Photonics Incorporated officially announced the launch of its new computerised, high-power, high-resolution laser spectrometer. The device was specifically developed to meet a rapidly growing demand for high-precision spectrometry in nano and biotechnological applications. Zecotech's latest offering pushes the limit of the precise spectral measurements and technological procedures required in these fields. Now in production, the first of the new spectrometers are to be shipped to the Institute for Quantum Computing at the University of Waterloo in Canada. Appleton has signed a supply agreement with Procter & Gamble to provide micro-encapsulated specialty chemicals. Appleton's initial project with Procter & Gamble involves micro-encapsulating the fragrance for Downy Liquid Fabric Softener. This is Appleton's first technical development partnership with P&G and includes a multi-year collaboration to co-develop innovative applications for Appleton's micro-encapsulation and chemical formulation capabilities. AOS Solar is developing solar silicon 4 technology that combines crystalline silicon photovoltaic efficiency with low-cost, high-throughput thin film manufacturing economics. AOS Solar's mission is to achieve crystalline silicon efficiency while reducing the amount of required silicon by 90%, the manufacturing energy budget required to achieve each watt peak of output by 50%, and the capital equipment required by 50%. Combination of this efficiency with thin film manufacturing economics will be presented for the first time at the IBFconferences.com Nanotechnology Investment Forum in Palm Springs. Atotech, a world leader in the development and manufacture of chemistry applications for the nanoelectronics industry with headquarters in Berlin in Germany, will conduct its next generation research and development in copper plating technology as part of a $5 million program being launched in partnership with the College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering at the University of Albany. NanoIdent Technologies, the world leader in the development and production of printed semiconductor-based sensors, and pan-European investment company MV Holdings, today announced MV Holdings' investment in NanoIdent. The funds will be used to accelerate NanoIdent's growth and further develop its established first-mover advantage in an industry that analyst firm ID TechX expects to be worth $300 billion by 2025. NanoIdent's printed semiconductor solutions address many high-value applications that traditional silicon-based semiconductors cannot. Well, that was AzoNano News for the week commencing the 21st of January 2008. If you have any nano courses, events or exhibitions you'd like to promote to a global nanotech audience, don't forget you can list them for free at azonano.com. To review any of the stories you've heard about in this podcast, or to stay in touch with the world of nanotechnology, please visit www.azonano.com. If you'd like to send us feedback or let us know about nanotechnology news in your part of the world, please email us at podcast@azonano.com. I'm Stuart Cameron. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.